I'm not so sure that the decibel level is legal there. And I'm serious. They've done studies on that. And being on the competition committee, there's got to be something to that, because it does get a little out of hand.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Brand. With me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
And joining us for the, I'm not even sure how many times, I do know it is an absolute pleasure having her back, longtime Warriors beat writer, sports director, and editor for sfbay.ca, and a huge fan of the Mo Spates-Kendrick Perkins rivalry, Sarah Todd. What's going on, Sarah?
It's going well. How are you guys doing?
I am fired up to finally have playoff basketball. I feel like we have been talking about the playoffs for like the last 3 months. You know, I mean, the Warriors kind of wrapped up the regular season way the hell back when, and to finally be in the portion of the season we've been looking forward to is just awesome.
As I was saying, I think that this time of April, I think, is better than December because it's so much better than Christmas. I have multiple times after the last two games saying it's the most wonderful time of the year.
Gonna hit that half and half. You almost sang it for us and then seemingly thought better about it and stopped. I'm going to tell you, I'm a little disappointed. I was hoping to get the full song.
You absolutely don't want me to sing full voice because full voice sounds like a dying cow. So it's better if I just talk or half-ass it.
I'm only more fired up about the song. Now it is what it is. Maybe later on, if you feel like giving us one of your answers in song, just know we're really excited about that.
Are we going to be drinking during this? Because then it could happen.
Scott, get some beers. Let's make this happen. I will follow up with my own kind of pseudo reference. I remember when the Warriors weren't making the playoffs all the time, certainly not religiously, and I was super bitter with the way the NBA handled the playoffs. The fact that they spaced everything out, that every series seemingly took 4 months, I was angry about it. I hated having to go through it. Now that the Warriors are part of it, now that I seemingly have interest not only in their series, but watching everyone else because I feel like we're better than them, so it's kind of fun peeking in, I love the way they do this. There's a game to look forward to every single night, and to keep my own reference without any singing, for me it's a little bit like Hanukkah. You know, there's something to look forward to for more than one night for a long foreseeable period, so it's a fantastic
time. You can spin your dreidel if you want to.
Thank you.
I don't know how you guys convinced me to record during the Wizards game. That's what I want to know.
Are they playing right now?
Yeah.
Who cares? I mean, nobody.
Yeah, no, we're currently recording during the Cavs-Celtics game too also.
Factually correct. Neither of those things I apparently care about. I wasn't even aware that it was going on right now. So that whole I have interest in other series apparently was just a filthy, filthy lie. Thank you so much for pointing that out. We do have tons of Warriors playoff basketball to take a look at, so we should jump in immediately. And instead of going through the games first, I want to get your guys' sense of the roster in general. And here's what I mean. As a neurotic fan, I can generally work up a real nasty hatred for the opposing team. Before the opening tip, I hate specific things about almost every opposing player's face. That's not true for these guys. I mean, and I've been trying. You know, it wasn't true before it started. It's not true two games in. I've got some random takes. I think that Ryan Anderson looks like Billy Zane from Titanic because he's wearing mascara, at least from what I can tell. I'm annoyed that Norris Cole plays for the team. And Eric Gordon looks like a cross between a beaver and Alvin from Alvin and the Chipmunks. But beyond that, no real animosity. Have you guys been able to develop hatred for this team? Am I alone here?
I think it's normal for a fan of a team to develop the kind of hatred that you're talking about. Yeah. For the other team. And for the Warriors' history, it's been easy in the past few years. Denver, that's
hateable.
An easy team. Yep. To hate. The Spurs, because they're the greatest.
Devils of basketball, yes.
Exactly. Clippers, so easy to hate. Awful. Them as a Warriors fan. But, I mean, what are you going to hate about the Pelicans? That Anthony Davis is young and great at basketball? I mean, yeah, you hate that because he's on the other team, but he doesn't take shots at other people. I think it's really weird that you hate Norris Cole, because that's really random.
Just that he plays for it. It's just that he plays for it.
I agree with the Norris Cole one.
Why?
I think it's mainly because he's the only guy who plays with any type of attitude on their team. And he kind of has that Nate Robinson-like swagger where he just thinks he's way better than he actually is.
I'm actually really interested in Norris Cole because he actually has the most playoff experience, and he's like 26.
I'll chase down that Norris Cole comment, but first let me give you a little bit of shit, Scotty. For those of you who, well, let me put that a different way. There's no way you could possibly know. Let me give you a quick behind-the-scenes look. We have been recording this now for about, what would you say, Sarah, about 15, 20 minutes? For those of you who just looked at your phone and realized we were only about 4 minutes into the podcast, that would be because Scotty's equipment has just completely, completely betrayed us twice. So if there's like a weird tussling noise or you guys can't hear us for a while, it's because Sarah and I are just beating the shit out of Scotty right now. And we apologize for any confusion. It is what it is. Back to the show. Sarah, I think you were saying, because it's been about 30 minutes now while we were fixing the equipment, that it was weird that I hated Norris Cole and then you noted his experience. It's actually the experience that annoys me about him. He seems like just out of place. I recognize him from Miami. I think he should only be in Miami. That obviously shows I just don't like change and I have my own problems. But it just physically annoys me when I see him on the court, especially when he is beating us, because I think he shouldn't be on the Pelicans. He feels like he should always be a member of the Heat.
I mean, it's not like he's spent like 15 years in Miami, you know. Yeah. He's a young guy and he's done free agency and he's moved around or trades or whatever. Like, that's a normal thing that you're getting mad at, which is strange.
Oh, and actually, after I've had a couple seconds to think about why I really dislike him, let me also add, I don't think he's that good of a player. And the idea that he has multiple championships on his resume, that also kind of annoys me. It seems like he kind of lucked into those, like Mark Madsen kind of thing, you know?
I like Norris Cole. He's probably my favorite player on the Pelicans, so I don't know why you guys have to hate on somebody who has had success in their career.
Don't let me in with him.
I just hope that your microphone didn't pick that up, but I guess we'll find out. Sarah, do you have any specific experience with the Pelicans while following the Warriors? You got any stories for us?
I don't have any really good stories with Pelicans players in particular, but I did have a funny conversation with Justin Holiday, which I think is great because, as we know, his brother is on the Pelicans, Drew Holiday.
Sure.
And I love his name. I love that I can say Drew and it sounds exactly as it's spelled. And it's not D-R-E-W where I have to say Drew, which it just seems so weird. But I was asking Justin, you know, and at the time he was in, his brother was injured as he is now. Yeah. And I said, well, you know, what if he's injured and you guys meet them in the playoffs? And what if you don't get play time? I know you guys are really competitive as brothers. Are you still going to be able to have that competitive conversation even if neither of you are seeing court time?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, absolutely. If we win the series, I'm going to hold it over his head. I'm going to rub it in his face. It's going to be so easy for me to talk crap to him about it.
That is exactly as it should be. and let me tip my hand on yet another neurosis that I have. I am such a competitive bastard that I am positive I had a sibling who was my age and we were both professional athletes. I honestly believe that if he was better than me, I would root against him. You know, if I was Fredo Curry looking up at Steph Curry, I'd say all the right things in the media. I'd make sure everyone understood that I loved my brother and I've supported him on every step of his career. But secretly, I would hate that success. I really would and would probably root against it. Where are you guys on that spectrum? Far more healthy? Would you root for a sibling if they were good at what they did? Where do you stand?
I think like I'm a scary amount of competitive.
Nice.
Where I might not even try to be nice about it in the media. I might hope that we were in separate conferences and hope that we'd meet in the finals so that at the end of it I could just bash him over and over again. And it would probably cause a falling out. I'm that competitive.
I love the idea of them asking you, you know, whatever, Sarah, how do you feel about your brother? And you'd be like, F him.
I'd be like, oh, that guy, the guy that sucks compared to me? Who cares?
The guy who used to beat one-on-one every day.
Yeah, right. The lesser Todd, you call him, just see how that works out. Yeah. How about you, Scott?
No, I always want success for every member of my family, no matter how distant you are. Third cousin, I wish you well.
And I think we all know now that Scott has a lot of family members listening to this podcast. So if you did, in fact, hear that, don't take that as truth. God knows what he was actually feeling. Well, hopefully
this
one
is,
day we'll find
this
out.
This is not a new thing, though, where me and you end up looking terrible and Scott just looks like the good guy.
No, that is 100% correct. All right, enough beating around the bush. Let's jump into these games. Generally speaking, we like to talk generalities, not, you know, specific games, but playoffs are just too damn fun. There's too much to talk about. Let's go through each game. Let's start with game one. I have been saying for a while, Sarah, that I thought the first quarter of this first playoff game, regardless of who they played, not just the Pelicans, was really important to the Warriors because they had to kind of show to the league and to themselves and to their fan base that they could carry over the magical success that they had during the regular season. And if they came out flat or if they came out anything less than excellent, it would be reason for concern and can kind of make them a little bit tight. And luckily, they answered the bell. These guys came out and raced off to a 28-13 lead, looked really good doing it. Do you guys think I was right about that? Do you think that they did need that early start to kind of set the tone, or was I overemphasizing?
I think that there's a small portion where you're right about it. I think it was very nice for them to continue into the playoffs with the same confidence that they finished the regular season with, just so that they could know, we're here, this is going to be okay, we can do this. But outside of that, I mean, I think they would have been fine if it hadn't been such a great first quarter for the first game.
Yeah.
They're going to sail through this series, I think.
Yeah, I mean, well, they did jump out to that early lead. I don't think they actually looked very good. I think that the ball movement was not what it had been. They really slowed the pace down. I just think New Orleans played even worse than the Warriors were playing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other side to that coin. I don't know if I agree that they didn't look good, or at least didn't jot down any notes that I thought they looked stagnant. But, you know,
I just thought people looked like they were questioning all the decisions they were making. Everyone wasn't, like, really deep, just into the motion. It took, like, a quarter for them to get the nerves off.
You're not going to give Sarah any for having her phone go off in the middle of the podcast?
Oh, before Scott does the good guy and I'm terrible thing, let me just say, I thought I turned it off, so be quiet. We'll just skip that.
I have really no legs to stand on because my equipment has been terrible today. So
I mean, factually correct, then I'll do it for you. Jesus, Sarah, you're the only professional in the room. You can't turn off your phone. It is what it is. I will agree with you, Scotty, on one side. I thought that the Pelicans did look tight. Anthony Davis specifically, we have spent, honestly, the entire year, but certainly the last couple of weeks leading up to this series, blessing him as the next coming. You know, we're all saying once LeBron gets a little bit older, Anthony Davis is going to be the best player in the league. I agree with that, but he didn't look like it in the first quarter of that Warriors game.
Yeah, he was admittedly nervous, though. Yeah. He said it after the game that there were nerves and that he was anxious. I mean, that's a high-pressure situation
right.
When you're that good and there's so many expectations that are surrounding you, not just for now, but for the future. He wants to have a good showing. I can't imagine the nerves. Like, yeah. I actually can't imagine it. So I'm not surprised that that happened. He obviously settled because he had an amazing fourth
right.
quarter. And then the Pelicans again in game two, even more settled. So I'm not really surprised about it. And I think nothing less of Anthony Davis for having those nerves.
I can associate with him in obviously a totally different way. I'm speaking from a fan's point of view, but watching this playoff game was different for multiple reasons, the principal of which before, these last couple years, in fact, stretch it even all the way back to We Believe, the last few times this franchise has found themselves in the playoffs, it was all upside. It was playing with house money. You know, we were rolling the dice, you know, put in your casino reference here, but we didn't really need to win. It was just fun being there, and I didn't feel any pressure as a fan. Totally different this time. You know, there was a whole lot of pressure. If they lose one of these first two games, it was going to feel, you know, like Chicken Little, like the sky was falling and that we didn't deserve this number one seed. And I thought, I wasn't at the game, and I'll defer to you, Sarah, but I thought that the crowd seemed to kind of have that sentence feeling. And you mentioned that Anthony Davis did find his game. He certainly did in the fourth quarter. He brought them almost all the way back. The Warriors still won. But as he went on that run, I thought Oracle seemed really tight.
Yeah, and it wasn't even just at the fourth quarter. Oracle, the crowd there was tight, and they were quieter than I am familiar with from the last 2 years in playoff
yeah.
runs. A lot of people were speculating that it was because it was a day game. It was so early.
Huh. Not enough time to drink.
Exactly. I think maybe not enough time to wake up and get drunk.
Right.
Maybe it was a different kind of crowd.
Sure.
Maybe different people than you're going to see at the night games.
Yeah.
Maybe it was that pressure that everyone is feeling now as Warriors fans coming into a situation where you're favorited to come out
or
of the West.
Or tickets are so much more expensive now that the crowd is a little bit more
pretentious?
Yeah.
I hope that's not true. Bill Simmons actually came out and did a whole little segment, one of his podcasts, saying that the Warriors playoff atmosphere is not as much of an advantage as it is during the regular season because of exactly what you're saying, Scott, that you get more of the more of a StubHub crowd because the tickets are valued so highly that the regular season ticket holders tend to kind of get rid of some of those tickets. They cannot resist the urge to, you know, Jesus, pay for next year's tickets by giving up one playoff, and now you have more passive corporate fans in the building. I don't know if I agree with it, but
But we say all this, yet then you have Monty Williams who comes
right.
out and says that Oracle was at a decibel level that he believes is illegal, and he actually wants to go to the NBA competition committee
yeah.
and look into whether or not there's an issue here.
And I'll define what I meant. When I was saying tight and when I said the atmosphere was getting kind of weird, I thought that Oracle brought its normal raucous, you know, amazing support. But when Anthony Davis kind of found his stride, when the Pelicans made a really impressive run in the fourth quarter and almost brought it all the way back, the crowd got much more concerned, much more anxious. It was almost as if they passed out 1,000 Red Bulls and we're all sitting there trembling, not really sure how to deal with the rising emotion. And I'll tell you what, I'm not the only one who noticed it. Steve Kerr was asked about it after the game, and he had this to say.
The first three quarters versus the fourth quarter tonight?
Well, obviously the first three were a lot better than the fourth, but it was good for us. Good for us to feel that. It's good for us to have to deal with, you know, the feeling in the building, especially as the favorite, you know, when the team starts to come back. And you got to feel that. That's all part of it.
Do you think it was a benefit to him? Going through that, feeling that, you know, having these guys slowly come back, and let me define that. Do you think it was a benefit first to the Warriors to let them come back, feel a little tight, and then be able to push them out of the building and get the win?
I mean, I think it's easy to say that it's good for any team that's had such seemingly easy success through the regular season to feel a little bit of that competition and playoff atmosphere. But I really didn't see it as like, oh, they almost came back and took it. For me, it was like they had a huge lead. Yeah. Anthony Davis had a good quarter. They still won. And the only reason that it seems so close is because the Warriors had an abnormal free throw shooting quarter.
That's exactly right. I had the exact same feeling. Even more so when Anthony Davis was coming back, or when he was leading them back, what my thought was that the Warriors are playing so well, or at least have such a big lead, I could actually appreciate watching Anthony Davis without having to hate him for his, you know, amazing talent and his you know, virtuosity and skill.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. I don't think I meant to use the word virtuosity there, but it is what it is. You can't win them all. My understanding, Sarah, just because we were talking about before we started, is that you have a pseudo crush on Anthony Davis. Is your favorite player in the league or what?
He's not my favorite player in the league. The obsession that I have with Anthony Davis is more just about his body type, and I don't mean that in any sort of sexual way. I'm obsessed with the idea that...
I'm starting to get nervous there.
Yeah, this could get weird. No.
Do I have to put an explicit on this one?
Yeah, this is going to be PG-13.
No one's going to be able to hear it anyway, so don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, but this might all have to be recorded again. I'm obsessed with the idea that he went from being... He grew 7 inches in a 3-month span, which is crazy to me. I mean, I would love to talk to his family doctor from the time and like the leading like bone doctor in the country, plus like his trainer, and just ask all three of them the serious question, like, okay, it's physically amazing, but his legs are just going to break, right, guys?
Right.
Like, I'm amazed physiologically at the specimen that he is.
Sure, right. Well, it's like a bunch of basketball scientists got together and tried to create a body type that would be perfect for the NBA game, and they ultimately came up with Anthony Davis. They did make a mistake maybe with the unibrow thing.
Although, yeah, was that when the unibrow grew as well?
I mean, apparently, and this is an unpopular take, one I will throw out nonetheless, I think the unibrow is not actually a unibrow. I think that there's a mole in the middle of there.
Whoa.
I think that some of the hair we're seeing is mole hair, not eyebrow hair, and because of that, I'm calling bull. I'm just going to say, well, he doesn't have a unibrow.
No, the hair is thinned in the middle, but it full-fledged goes across his face. It is a unibrow. It is terrible. I can't believe an NBA player with the money he makes can't spend $10 to go into any beauty salon and just have the middle of it ripped off. The fact that he's embraced it is crazy to me. There's no reason that anybody should embrace looking like a fool.
See, there was a period of time when I was a young professional and I had braces. I had to get braces put on. And not to use a pun here, but I really did embrace it.
Ugh.
And really owned it. Ugh. in a way that is actually, I think, what Anthony Davis is doing with the unibrow. The big difference is I really didn't have much of a choice. Like, my teeth were mangled. I needed braces. Whereas, like you said, Anthony Davis can go and get that cleaned up real quick and for real cheap.
There are so many portions of that story I have a question with. Let's begin with young professional. How old were you when you had braces, man?
22 to 24.
Man, you really were a young professional.
Yep.
That must have been fairly awkward for everybody. How'd you get that far before you put on the braces?
Luckily, they did not... They interviewed me when I didn't have braces on, and I showed up with braces, and they didn't fire me, to their credit.
I had braces for 5 years because I used to have just a fucked up grill. I used to, contrary to what is now beautiful, I used to be ugly. No. And I had braces until I was 20 years old. So
turns out you guys teamed up and made me look like the asshole this time. So nicely played. I'll take us away from braces and unibrows and the way people's faces look and add this. Anthony Davis wasn't the only great player on the floor. We have our own soon-to-be MVP to talk about. I thought Curry was just amazing. He ended up playing 40 minutes, which is a far cry from his average. We've been saying that his numbers were going to go up because he sat out fourth quarters. Didn't sit out this one. He ended up with 34 points, 4 boards, 5 assists, 3 steals. We have spent multiple podcasts wishing that Steph Curry developed a killer instinct. don't need to worry about that anymore. This guy now is constantly probing to see how he can make a difference. It's a shoot-first guy now, but if you take that away from him, he can immediately find the open guy. Over the course of our podcast, literally over the last couple of years, we have seen him develop into the killer that you know basically brought home that playoff win over the weekend, and it is a damn pleasure to watch.
I think that, and it's not just me being a Bay Area media person or reporter from here who sees Steph Curry all the time. I think he's the clear MVP candidate, and I completely agree with
you. MVP or MVP candidate?
He's the clear MVP.
No.
I think that when it comes down to it, you could go through all the analytics you want to, looking at Harden and Curry, if those are your front runners, which I think they are for most people. And because you're going to get such a tight race when you look at all of those things and people's opinions, I think the bottom line is, if you're going to have a team, who do you want? And you got to pick only one of those guys. And I think that everybody is going to pick Steph Curry over James Harden.
I completely agree with you. As far as this Game 1 win, I thought it was kind of a perfect case scenario. You know, I think that we established, one, Warriors season during the regular portion of the year was not a fluke. Two, that we are simply better than the Pelicans. It's going to be close. It's going to be a tight series that's worth watching. But really, on a man-to-man basis, we are ultimately going to walk away with this. And finally, three, it's going to be a fun series. You know, we do get to watch people like Anthony Davis. We do get to watch this pseudo non-hateable team, with the exception of filthy Norris Cole. But, you know, the rest of it is going to be really entertaining. So I'm looking forward to it. A quick, stupid story, because I really want your guys' opinion. Some backdrop. I have huge funk with my cable company. Just huge funk. They screw me so many times to the point that I've called them and threatened to sue them and all these ugly things. Last call I had with them, I told them I'm leaving them. The money that they gave me is not enough, and I'm definitely changing over carriers. I was too lazy to change, so now I'm stuck with them, and now that I've played that card, I can't go anywhere. There's our backdrop. Now, Saturday, it's Warrior Day. You know, we've been looking forward to this day. First game, I'm so fired up. We invite all these people over. I've got this great barbecue. I tape the beginning of the game because the food wasn't quite ready, so we're watching it on tape delay. We're going through, get to about the third quarter, and you know if you pause a game that's been taped, it puts those big pause bars up on the screen. So we do that, pause it, I press play, the game starts, but the pause bars stay on. And in fact, the pause bars stay on for, I don't know, maybe the next 20 minutes as we're watching the goddamn game unfold. Ultimately, they go away. I fast forward trying to get through a computer. Now the game sticks. I can't stop it from fast forwarding. We're flying through the score. You know, it's just this terrible thing. So here's my question. At the end of it, we ultimately figure it out. I reset the cable box. We can watch it. And I talk to all my friends. They're all, no, we had a great time. Don't worry. That's fine. It could happen to any of us. If I had you guys over, that happens. Good food. You know, everything else worked out. Would you ever come to my house to watch another game? Or is that it? Have I lost this group of people?
I probably will never go to your house to watch a game because you told me the story, not just because I wasn't there.
See, I knew it. God damn it.
Definitely. I personally don't have DVR, so I'm often having to rely on friends' DVRs, and so you are definitely off my list. I would no way I'm coming back there.
You should have seen the giant sweat marks like under my arms and on my back as that thing was unfolding, and I'm talking super fast, trying to be like, no, this is cool, right? You guys can see through this. Those bars aren't that fast. I mean, just an absolute nightmare. Let's turn our attention over to game two, and this seems like a good place to start it. We said a little bit how the environment in Oracle was a little bit tight, and Scott, you referenced it. You know, Monty Williams obviously did not agree. The coach of the Pelicans came out before game two and said not only was the crowd loud, but that the noise inside the building could go so far as to be considered illegal. In fact, listeners, you guys probably heard that with the quote up front. So we went in thinking that this was going to be insane. I didn't go to the game. Sarah, how was the decibel level? Was this the loudest you'd ever heard this crowd for game two? What did Monty do?
It was the loudest I'd ever heard the crowd for the first 2 minutes of a Warriors game.
Okay.
And then from that point on, it was reminiscent of what I know the Warriors crowd to be over the last couple of years during the playoffs. It was, I mean, the loudest crowd that I've been in, and it has been over the last couple of years. But they did the Warriors chant louder than I've ever heard it while the Pelicans starting lineup was being announced. And I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
To the point where you couldn't hear the PA announcer or anything at all.
That's sweet.
The radio broadcasters couldn't hear anything. So that was really impressive.
I mean, what is Monty Williams
just about
thinking?
To ask
like, what a terrible, terrible thing to do.
What was he doing? No, really, was it a throwaway comment? Like, he just thought that no one would pick up on it, it meant nothing, and then it got blown up? Because why the hell would you wake a sleeping dog like that?
This is my humble and one person's opinion. I think that last night, when asked about the comments that he'd made earlier in the day, Monty Williams said, okay, I hope that everybody took that as tongue-in-cheek.
Okay.
The competition committee hasn't even mentioned it. And I truly think that, and this is over my few experiences in speaking with him when the Pelicans come into town, he is a very dry person.
Yeah.
Let's not forget, he also comes from the Popovich camp.
Yep.
Those personality traits, I mean, he's very dry. He doesn't really care for stupid questions, stupid answers. And I really think he was probably just saying, being kind of sarcastic.
Sure, right. And because we don't pick it up in his vocal inflection because he is so dry, it got picked up as a serious comment, and then here we are.
Yes, I truly do think that. But, I mean, in defense of everybody else who didn't think that,
right,
it was still so dumb to say, because what moment in history of sports events at all has the opposing coach said, God, your fans are so loud, and then the fans of that team have gone, okay, well, we'll quiet down.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Never right. has that
Sorry
happened.
That we were illegal. You know, maybe we'll try to do a little bit better this time. I was really surprised by it. I'll tell you what, it didn't make that much of a difference. I mean,
Before we leave that, though, my favorite line was Kerr at his press conference the other day, as he's leaving, Monty Williams is going to be coming on next. And so Kerr says to reporters, try to keep it down, everyone.
Yeah,
I like Kerr, man. I really hilarious. Like. He seems like he's really good on his feet. Seems like he has no problem throwing a jab here or there, and he's got the type of personality where you can throw those jabs and no one's going to care. You know, like Monty, I'm sure didn't take it hard, didn't care at all that he did that. I mean, I really like his personality in addition to his coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. Kerr has continued to be jovial and sarcastic and. He's a really nice guy, and I've really enjoyed everything about him, and I don't think that Monty took that anyway. It was funny. Everybody laughed in the room. So
I mentioned that it didn't really make a difference. Here's what I meant. Obviously, Sarah told us that it made a difference in the decibel level, but it didn't make a difference on the floor. You know, the crowd was crazy, crazy, crazy loud, and then the Pelicans jumped out to a 13-point lead to start off the first, so apparently the extra emotion didn't necessarily work in the Warriors' favor. Now, Warriors obviously came back, in fact, won the game. A few things stuck out for me. Let's start with Draymond. Everyone's been saying Draymond is deserving of a max contract next year. I'm one of those people. Everyone's saying is that the reason he deserves a max contract is because of his defense. He flashed that defense last night. I don't know the numbers specifically. I want to say it's something 3 of 9, but he was playing phenomenal defense on Sarah's boyfriend, AD. And even though Davis ended up with something like 21 points when Draymond was on him, it was an entirely different game. We saw the value he adds to this team.
Right, he was a plus 24 on the night with just four shots, which I mean, and that was what I asked Kerr last night. I said there was a 2 or 3 minute moment at the beginning of the fourth, I think it was, where Draymond stole the ball, threw a lob, hit a three-pointer, switched like 3 different times defensively, and it was just a small moment, and it was so, so important for that fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. Because not because it gave them the lead or any of that, but because he showed, like, okay, this is how the entire team needs to play. He sparked the rest of the team. He showed them this is the edge you need to bring into the game. And I think, I mean, he's going to be a leader.
And apparently he rolled his ankle twice in the first quarter, mm-hmm. and had also was, like, nursing an ankle injury. Plus, I think he'd only sat out 3 minutes entering the fourth quarter. So, I mean, that guy must have been completely gassed, but still found some way to find a whole nother level that he went to and then took the rest of the team to.
Yeah, and he was pissed off that Kerr had taken him out of the game. I mean, they yelled at each other, and that's, you know, an ongoing thing that happens between the two of them. They'll scream at each other, and then they'll be like, you know what, we both know that we're smart guys. I mean, they love each other.
Competitive dudes who have no problem letting that competition erupt between them, and they, you know, respect the power dynamic so that ultimately flips back and there's not a problem.
Kerr knows that he's going to need Draymond out there a lot of the time. And like he said this last night, he said, you know, I asked Draymond if he's tired, and if he says no, I leave him in, and if he says yes, I leave him in.
The other person who's played really stuck out to me is Klay Thompson. Steph didn't score in the final 17 minutes of the game. He was out for a little bit of it and then came back in, and they were pressuring him, they were doubling him, they were getting the ball out of his hands. But we talked about, Scott, during the last episode, you know, can Klay carry a team? And he didn't carry the offense entirely, but he was his leading scorer, ended up with 26 points, and I thought showed, if you take Curry out of this game, Klay is right there and is an absolute reason why the Warriors are a complete legitimate title contender, if not favorite.
Yeah, he had 14 points, I think, in that final quarter last night, and I think it's starting to become unconscious for him, like not a conscious thing where he sees Steph's shot is cold, or we're not getting offense somewhere else, I need to step up. I think that is just a natural thing that has happened to him. And he'll say things like, oh, it was just the flow of the offense. But I think that his basketball body is now moved into that point where he can carry a team when it's necessary. And that's what we saw in the final quarter.
Right. And what I liked about it was that he actually was being aggressive and assertive and taking the ball to the basket, which I think after the All-Star break, I think he stopped being as aggressive going to the rim, was settling more for jumpers. So it did show the type of Klay Thompson that I was hoping to see, which is some guy you can actually rely on to take over a game as opposed to some guy who just catches fire.
Yeah, that's fair. It also shows how they complement each other, how the Splash Brothers fit like Tetris. You know, you look at the backcourt for New Orleans. Tyreke Evans is a very good player. Eric Gordon has found himself again. He is also a very good player. But they don't work in tandem so well. Tyreke needs the ball, ends up kind of pounding it and going directly to the hole. Eric Gordon is kind of a similar player. They don't seem to complement each other, whereas Steph and Klay, when Steph, you know, not disappears, but starts stepping back, Klay seamlessly comes up. When Steph is playing phenomenally well and the focus is on him, rightfully so, Klay seamlessly, you know, steps back in the other direction. And I think that says a lot into how this team is built and how well they actually complement each other, you know? Another moment that really stood out, it's about 2 minutes left. The Warriors were up, I want to say 7-8. I mean, the game was pretty much ending.
I feel like I know exactly what you're going to say.
All right, and Steph has the ball up top. He's being guarded by Anthony Davis. He takes the ball in one hand, and he starts clicking his head back and forth as if he's taking off the seconds in his mind and something great's going to happen. Steve Kerr called a timeout right then, which I was really disappointed because I wanted to see how that thing played out. But that was like something from like And One or something. Super random, very cool moment, almost like watching a movie
I've never seen a moment like that.
What the hell is going on there?
Especially because they did a great job, whoever was producing this game, picked the camera angle from the back baseline. Yeah. So you saw Steph from his back. It wasn't the typical shot from the side of the court.
Yeah.
It was just made for great TV. And then all of a sudden the whistle blows. And I'm like, wait, what? And then Steve Kerr calling timeout. Like, come on, man.
I wrote an entire blog post about that moment. It was my favorite moment of the entire game because it, like, if anything in the world could have happened, an asteroid were to hit, or war to have broken out, or the plague to hit, I feel like it would have been caused by like some telekinesis that Steph Curry had, because he looked so just dominantly serious in that moment. It was crazy. I've never seen him look like that.
This is a very weird thing to say, but I'll say it. I thought it was the most MVP thing he did all year because it screamed confidence. It screamed, this is my house. This is my game. I'm going to go ahead and finish it off. And by the way, I am not nervous about it in any way.
And I want the best defender, you know, I want their star player on me so I can just embarrass him.
And you know, it felt like I was watching above the rim, like something like Birdie would do. I genuinely loved it. And while you're talking about having the best player on him, the way that they're matching up against Steph is interesting. They're going big. They got Quincy Poindexter guarding him. They got Anthony Davis up against him. I guess they think that length is necessary.
You know what I heard about that is Monty Williams, a Popovich guy, actually talked to Popovich ahead of the series, and they traded notes and ideas on how to defeat the Warriors. And one of the things he said was like, look, I put Kawhi on Steph. I would recommend putting Poindexter on him, somebody big. That's like, if you're, I guess it makes sense, but it's funny just to think about Popovich plotting ways to beat the Warriors in the first round, even though, you know, he's not going to see them to the Western Conference Finals.
Can't you see Popovich taking Monty Williams to the side and just to entertain himself, saying, and you should take a shot at the Oracle crowd, you know, just because it's going to definitely work. You should say something that's going to help your team. Then he goes home and just laughs his ass off.
Yeah.
Obviously worked against him.
Another thing about that moment that we're talking about, how lucky was Anthony Davis to get that timeout?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was so tired. I mean, he was, like, bending over, catching his breath. And it could have happened. Like, it could have been a moment where, you know, Steph had the ball. He wasn't even moving. He just stood there with it, like, on his hip.
Yep.
Like, come at me, bro.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the whistle goes, and it could have easily been Steph just, like, with a mad scientist cackle, like, you lucky son of a
bitch. No, there's no doubt. I mean, it was screaming, we both know I'm going to win this possession. You know, I mean, absolutely. It looked like he was making eye contact with him. It was a really, really satisfying moment.
It was so beautiful.
I don't know if you got to watch this here. I assume you didn't because you weren't at the game. But post-game, the TNT boys got back together, and Barkley did what he always does, takes a bunch of shot at the Warriors. And what he said was that won't come to fruition this time, and it's the take he's had forever, but when we come up against the big bad boys, specifically next round, be it Memphis or Portland, we're going to get pushed around and we're not going to be able to get away with any of this stuff, and jump shooting teams don't win championships. Scott and I have talked about it ad nauseum. What do you think, sir? Is there any good points to that? I mean, do you think he actually has a take in there, or is it just Barkley being Barkley?
I think it's just Barkley being Barkley. I don't think it's a good take at all. I think if you're going to talk about them, and this is something that has been echoed by especially Draymond Green, the loudest player on the Warriors, but he's absolutely right, and I agree with him when he said, like, okay, if we're a jump shooting team, why do we have the best defense in the league?
Right.
Like, you can't just say the Warriors are a jump shooting team, because they're not. They have the highest rated defense. They have arguably the best two defenders in the league in Andrew Bogut and Draymond Green. It's crazy to think that they're not going to win games just with defense.
Yeah, and I think that they won this game with defense. It was finally in the fourth quarter when they really locked people down. That's what allowed them to go on these typical runs that they normally get a little earlier in the game. It's taken them a little longer to get the stops than normal, I felt. But you're absolutely right. This is a team that actually wins on its defense, but it's the offense that always gets the talk in the media.
So what have we learned after two games? And let's do it this way. What worries you? We've watched them go through eight quarters now. We got a kind of a sense of what the rotations, what the matchups are going to be. What worries you after watching that?
So what worries me, if I'm the Warriors, is how quickly New Orleans had settled. It took them one quarter to settle into the fact that they're a young team in the playoffs,
yep.
Especially Anthony Davis. They came out in game two with much higher resolve. They were grittier in game two. And when you were talking about, did that fourth quarter, did the Warriors need that? No, I think they needed game two. They need to have the team come out and beat them in the first half and force them to win the game instead of come out strong and just wait until they kind of ended up with the win.
No, I feel that. I at one point scribbled down New Orleans isn't ready for the playoffs, and I think that was right after the first quarter in the first game. And then by the end of the first quarter in the second game, I immediately erased that because they found themselves. You're absolutely right.
I worry a little bit about the bench still, and I guess mainly where the production on offense is going to come from when Curry's sitting. I think it was a much bigger issue in the first game for sure when the bench was just terrible.
Yep.
But even in the second game, you saw Klay Thompson step up when Curry was, you know, not around, which was good. But overall, I'm still not feeling the bench production.
And Livingston hasn't totally found his game yet, which will absolutely be important if they're going to get past this thing, or get past not just this round, but the next two rounds that are coming up. Here's what worried me. Couple of things. One, they can't guard Anthony Davis. We knew that. Nobody can on earth. You know, they're going to have that difficulty, but there really isn't a very good matchup. And if this kid completely recognizes just how much better he is, that could be a problem going forward.
Didn't you say Draymond did like an incredible job?
He did. No, he did. He did a phenomenal job, and he still ended up with, you know, what was it, 21 points?
He had 0 points in the fourth quarter.
But the point is, I mean, whether or not you can guard him and like stop him offensively, I don't think is the point of guarding Anthony Davis. The point is to wear him down.
Yeah, right. and limiting him and making other people ultimately beat you even if he puts up 30. The other thing that kind of bothered me was that, and we've mentioned this too, Tyreek Evans was a Rookie of the Year either candidate or actually was
he won it.
Yeah, okay, won the Rookie of the Year.
Same draft as Steph.
Right. Eric Gordon was a max player, and you know both of them had their careers derailed by injuries. We haven't said either of their names a whole lot, but they, you know, maybe I shouldn't say that they're back, but they're legit. Those are good players. This team is filled. The Pelicans is filled with good, legitimate NBA players. Poindexter is a lot better than I thought he was, and I think we're, you know, it's only a matter of time before they kind of put everything together. We're going to be losing at least one game in this series.
Do you guys worry about the teams getting really physical with Steph? I mean, in that first game especially, he was talking about after the game, I've got scabs and scars and I got totally beat up. Is that going to be an issue? I mean, we've talked about it might be one. Do you think it's materializing?
I don't worry about that at all. I mean, if he gets bumped and bruised and scratched and scabbed, like, who cares? It's the playoffs. It's going to happen whether or not. I mean, it's the Pelicans doing it. But I think the thing that is worrisome about Tyreek Evans, to your point, is he's going to drive all the time, and that's going to be worrisome for the big guys because
foul problems.
Mm-hmm. And if you put Bogut into foul trouble and you get Azeli into foul trouble, then Anthony Davis can have his way.
That's absolutely right. And to what you were saying, Scotty, that I'm not as worried about them bumping and bruising him right now. I'm much more worried about people like Zach Randolph doing those bumps and bruises, or LaMarcus Aldridge, or even Robin Lopez. I mean, that's when we're going to really see the toll kind of be taken. But as of right now, it's not concerning me. Other side of the coin, what do we feel good about after a couple of games? I'll start us off. Steph's been amazing. He hasn't had that unbelievable Steph game yet where he hits 7 3-pointers in a quarter and just finishes things up. I think we're going to see at least one of those, if not two. And when that happens, this series is done.
I think that's a really good point. If you're going to feel good about something looking at the first two games, you have to feel good about the fact that you haven't seen the Warriors play at their best.
Yep.
And
like B level so far at best, right? I mean, like, as they've played, it'd probably be about a B grade.
Yeah. And they all feel that they can go, they have a potential that they hadn't reached even during the regular season. I'm sure that we'll see that later on in the playoffs. I think worst case scenario, New Orleans will be able to pull out a game in New Orleans and it'll go to 5, but that is worst case scenario for the Warriors because I don't even think they've given it their A game.
Yeah, I think the fact that they've won two games, the first two games of the playoffs, being the number one seed with the expectations that are there, I think that to me is something that's really going to be helpful for them going forward. And yeah, they may lose a game, and I think that as fans, we have to understand that like that happens. I mean, pretty much every team that's won a championship has lost a playoff game. It's not going to be the end of the world if they do lose game 3, but I know that we tend to think, at least in my mind, I've had this idea that somehow they should just sweep this whole entire championship run, which is just not going to happen.
I would like to see a sweep this round just to kind of cement that they are this historically dominant team, but of course you're right. You mentioned game 3. I do think that game 3 is remarkably important. I'm not keeping that from my own original thought. I'm stealing it from Steph Curry, in fact. Here's Steph talking about how important game 3 is, prompted by a very well-put question by our own Sarah Todd.
You guys are obviously aware that you're going to get every team's best shot, and New Orleans came out tonight with a little bit more resolve. How do you expect things to be once you get to New Orleans?
Just the playoffs. I mean, we talked about that during the regular season, that no matter if we were at home or on the road, we were going to get everybody's best shot. But you expect that in the playoffs, it's win or go home. So the grinded out kind of feel that these games were here, you expect it's going to be the exact same thing, if not tougher, in New Orleans. I'm sure they'll get some life being at home and feeling their home crowd. And, you know, it'll be a big swing game. If we can go down and take care of game 3, that's a huge momentum builder for us to really seize control of the series. So we want to come out in the first, you know, part of that game and hopefully set the tone. And we know it's not going to be easy regardless of how well we play.
I should say, when I was listening to this earlier and I heard your voice and there was no one in the room, I was still like, I know her. I know her for sure. And she has been on the podcast. So I embarrass myself for that. With that backdrop of the importance of game 3 behind us, what's your guys' guess? Who wins game 3?
I think the Warriors are going to win game 3. I think they are going to recognize that New Orleans came out really hard in game 2. and they're going to just match it with even more intensity once they get there, because they're going to want to quiet that crowd.
Yeah, New Orleans gave it sort of their big push in game two, and I think the Warriors are going to give it their big push in game three, and I think that they win this. I actually think that they do end up sweeping.
I think they win it going away, game three. I think it's going to be a blowout. I think it's going to be more than 15 points, and I think they're going to establish that within the first half. And for all the reasons you guys are saying, we did. We took New Orleans' best punch in game two. You got to figure that Golden State is, you know, getting ready to serve their own best punch in game three, so hopefully we'll see it. I think ultimately they win the series in five. Scott, you said clean sweep.
Yeah, broomsticks.
And if I'm remembering correctly, you're saying five games, sir?
I said worst case scenario five, yeah. But I do think they're going to sweep.
Fantastic. All right, one last question. Looking forward to the next round. We play the winner of Portland-Memphis. Memphis came out and just beat the shit out of Portland in the first game. Who are you guys hoping to see? Assuming the Warriors move on, what opponent would you handpick?
Early question for this. You know, we're two games into this series. This guy's already moving on. I don't know.
I have a sweeping them. It seemed like a safe question at this stage. Your equipment's going to screw us anyways. No one's going to hear these answers. We don't have to worry about that.
I mean, I'd rather play Portland for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious choice would be Portland. I don't think it's going to happen even by a long shot. I think you'd want to see Portland because they're so beat up that those poor guys, they're not going to win it.
Yeah.
They're probably going – the Warriors will be seeing Memphis in the second round. And, I mean, I think that they're going to have them in five games also.
I hope you're right. We'll find out. Well, huge fun, you guys. Thank you so much for listening. We enjoy this every week. That was certainly true this week. Please remember, if you're looking to reach out to us, our email address is warriorshuddle@gmail.com.
And look in the description of this podcast episode right on your phone. You can just click there and email us right from that.
There you go. Our Twitter account is @WarriorsHuddle. Our website remains warriorsworld.net. We're on a bunch of podcasting services, including iTunes. Sarah, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at NBASarah, Sarah with an H, or read my stuff at sfbay.ca.
All right. Huge fun. Go Warriors and f*** Norris Cole.
Gone back home, D90, to the land of the beautiful queen. Gone back home to my baby, going back to New Orleans.
Good.